Okay, see the chairs on, Chairperson.
Thank you, Shanaz. Apologies for that, colleagues. I don't know if I had the wrong link. However, I was having some challenges logging in. Good morning, honorable members and colleagues. Perhaps let's begin, Shanaz, by checking who is present in the meeting. We do know that this morning's meeting is a joint committee meeting. But perhaps let's first receive apologies. Shanaz, are there any apologies on your side?
Once again, good morning, Chair. So the apologies that I received from higher education side is the apology from the minister, who has another commitment at the same time. And then from our members, we've got one from Ms. Chantal King. I think she's got a problem with her flights today. So, but from the other committee side, on the platform, I've got five of the different committee secretaries. That's yes. I'm not quite sure how we want to handle those introductions and apologies. I did ask them to forward me the apologies for the record purposes, like after this meeting. But in terms of the committee presence, maybe they should, or the chairpersons, if they are to do that introductions for themselves, Chair. I'm not sure.
Okay, thank you, Shanaz. Honourable members, we had extended this morning's meeting to the Committee on Trade, Industry and Competition, led by Honourable Hermans, the Committee on Communication and Digital Technologies, led by Honourable Manelli, the Committee on Public Enterprises, led by Honourable Makaka, the Committee on Small Business Development, led by Honourable Siwela, the Committee on Public Works and Infrastructure, led by Honourable Ntobongwana, the Committee on Corporate Governance and Traditional Affairs, led by Honourable Khasa, the Standing Committee on Appropriations, led by Honourable Kutelezi, as well as the Committee on Health, led by Honourable Jacobs. I would like to then have an indication, perhaps if those chairs are in the meeting, and the committees can then, like we did last week, members can indicate which members from which committees are present. I see Honourable Butelezi's mic is open, so maybe we'll start with him.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, Honourable Members. Sister Butelezi. This does a little bit tricky for my other members of the
committee. Recording in progress.
The different commitments, which I don't think I'll go into, but others promise that perhaps they may join us a little bit later. But I am on the platform, and thank you very much, Honorable Chair, for having me.
Thank you very much, Honorable Butelezi. The next chairperson, Mr. Khasa, I see your hand is up.
Yes, I am also present, and I think at the right time, maybe members who are participating will indicate. I think there was no indication that members will not attend. Thank you very much for the invitation.
Thank you, Honourable Khasa. Honourable Jacobs.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair. Good morning to everyone. We have a number of members present today. I'm just going to scroll as I mentioned them. Honourable Yela, Honourable Dr. Jembakwayo, Honourable Wilson, Honourable Thaba, Honourable Ismail, Honourable, a little moment. Make sure I don't miss anybody. Ismail, Honourable I don't see the other name. Honourable Chirwa is earlier. Yes, Honourable Chirwa. Honourable Harvard. And if I'm missing anybody else, they can just mention themselves. But those are members I see on the platform from
I'm also on the platform, Chair, Honourable Clark.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Jacob. I'm not sure if Honorable Chira is yours or ours, but we could also count Honorable Chira as part of the members present from the Committee on Higher Education. Thank you very much, Honorable Jacobs and the police from Health. Can I see the next committee, please?
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Kaya Makakla. I am present and I see a number of members here, but I won't be in a position to do what Honorable Jacobs done. But I can account that there are some few that are present here. And I could not get any apologies from my side. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Makata. Honorable Ntobongwana?
Thank you, Chair. Public Works and Infrastructure is here. So far, the members that have joined, it's Honorable Shabalala, Honorable Suwisa, Honorable Tramare, Honorable Hicklin. Those are the only members so far, but all members are aware and the invitation has been sent to all of them. So Public Works and Infrastructure is here. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ntomongwana. Any other committees? Honorable Siwela?
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm here. All members have been invited, waiting for them to join us. Thank you.
Thank you very much, ma'am. Honorable Maneli, not sure if there's anyone from that committee, communications. Okay, are there any other committees that we've left out?
Yes, I think it's yours, Chair.
thank you very much, Honorable Litier. Thank you, Honorable Members, from the Committee on Higher Education, Science and Innovation. We have myself, Kadra, as well as Honorable Litie, who has just spoken, Honorable Mahlatsi, the whip to the committee. I believe we would also have Honorable Mananiso, Honorable Makesi. Sorry, I'm just trying to browse through. Honorable Boshoff and Honorable Chira. I'd like to believe those are the honorable members from the Committee on Higher Education, Science and Innovation that are present here this morning. Thank you very much, honorable members, for availing yourselves this morning. It really is, and I see Honorable Zondo has just logged on as well, or rather he's in the waiting room. Thank you very much for availing yourselves this morning. It really is an honor for us as a committee to have yourselves present here. We believe that in the work that we do as committees, often the view is that when departments or entities come and appear before us, we are asking them, what have you done? Why aren't you doing what you're doing? When are you going to do X, Y, and Z? But we also try to communicate as that Committee on Higher Education, Science and Innovation, that we also want to be told as committees how perhaps we can assist departments and entities in strengthening the work that they are mandated to do. And so part of that has been, you know, in the committee that we had, we then asked the DG Ndwaga, how could we accelerate the work that we need to do in terms of the decadal plan, of course, and finalizing the decadal plan on science, technology, and innovation as well. And a big part of it, of what the response from Dr. Ndwaga, the DG to science and innovation was that we need to integrate science and innovation into government as a whole, into society as a whole, and not have it located as a concept that, you know, is exclusively belonging to the Department of Science and Innovation, but something that is part and parcel of the planning of departments across government, not even only departments, but the various spheres of government as well, various public entities, in using science and innovation to really accelerate the development of our country. Part and parcel of that, of course, would speak to integrating science and innovation projects or initiatives. Another part of that would also speak to better budget coordination across government, specifically speaking to also earmarking funds for science and innovation. So we then said, okay, well, we would seemingly need voter forces across committees so that committees are also able to charge on their departments to better integrate science and innovation in their departments, but also to be specific in terms of budget allocation for science and innovation projects. And so we thought that perhaps we could create a platform for the department to explain to various committees how essential science and innovation, the integration of science and innovation is, in also bringing to life the Decadal Plan. So that is essentially why we've invited honorable members this morning. I think DG Mdjwakha will probably do greater justice to presenting this case to yourselves. But we really look forward to the contributions that you will make, the insights you will bring to from your various committees. Last week, we had a joint committee meeting with Health, and we really learned a lot, not only on how, when we speak about health, focusing on the technologies that speak to so protecting citizens in terms of their health or promoting good health, but also, colleagues were able to assist us in the more integral part of what constitutes a technology for health. So we learned a lot last week, and I believe, honorable members, we are bound to learn a lot today as well from the various committees. What we would like to see happen at a later stage is to also have the various departments of the committees that are present here to present to us, you know, the work that they are currently doing around science and innovation. At the moment, of course, we'll have the DG Mdjwakha from Science and Innovation, from the Department of Science and Innovation, presenting to all of us and us interacting with that presentation. But at a later stage, we'd like to have an in-person meeting where these various departments are present and are giving us a synopsis of their contributions and investments towards science and innovation. And of course, looking at how we can better synergize the development within within government, as well as budget, better budget coordination as well, which is really integral to bringing to life the Decadal Plan. So that's I think about it from our side, honorable members. I hope I've been able to capture the purpose of this meeting quite well. Feel free, you're all welcome, and we look forward to your really robust engagement. So now I'd like to believe that from the department, we have DG Mdjwakha who will be leading the delegation. I don't see DM or Minister on the platform. Is that correct?
Yes, DG DG is here, Minister and Deputy Minister is not, but I spoke to DG earlier, so he's ready.
Okay. All right. Well, having said that and believing that there aren't any questions from members at this point, I'd like to then hand over to DG Mdjwakha.
Thanks very much, Honorable Mkhatshwa. I hope you can hear me on the other side from Pretoria.
You are clear, DG.
Okay. So thanks for the welcome and the introductions that we've heard from the other portfolio committees and other members. It's unlikely that we will remember all of them, Honorable Chair. We will try our level best during the Q&A, of course, to make sure that we are able to acknowledge and thank every of the members that have joined. I hope you can see the slides. I'm not so sure.
There's still, we can't see the individual slides, DG. We're seeing 9 slides on the screen at the moment.
Uh-oh. I think there was a tutorial that was given by
by Honorable Lizier.
Yes. So I suspect that's the tutorial I need. If we are
open. We're here. The last time I sent my invoice, it was paid within 30 days. So I'm ready to just go to slideshow there, DJ. On top, there's a bar. Yeah.
Can you see it now?
No, I still see the 9 slides. I'm saying, where is your cursor? Move your cursor. I want to see where is your cursor.
There's something that says show taskbar and display settings.
Show taskbar. Where? On top of the bottom. Just go on is it the row? It should be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Row 7 there, there's a slideshow something. Can you see that one if you start from 5?
No, I don't see that. I only see... Is this better?
Yes, that's perfect.
Can you see them move?
Yeah, we can see the slides. Did you?
Okay, no, thank you.
I'll send my invoice on Monday and count 30 days from then. Thanks.
Thanks. It will be paid on Friday, definitely, Honorable Etche. Thank you very much. So we hope we will be able to do this in about 35, 40 minutes at the latest, Honorable Mkacha and Honorable Members. So today we want to just give recent updates to the policy, Science, Technology and Innovation Policy, and the underlying reasons why we felt it was important to have a new white paper on science, technology and innovation. We will then talk about the philosophy underlying the decadal plan, which is a plan 2021-2031 that is an implementation document of the white paper of science, technology and innovation policy. We will then indicate some priorities that we think we would like to drive in the next 10 years and some societal grand challenges that we believe we need to drive again as part of solving some of the problems that we have as a society. And then there are a number of systemic enablers of the decadal plan that includes the Science and Innovation Interministerial Committee, which our minister is chairing, with a number of ministers whose portfolio have science, technology and innovation. The Innovation and Skills Compact, the view is to drive innovation in these areas of priorities and societal grand challenges. We will need a new skills set, and then we want to propose a new model of defining the roles between the Department of Science and Innovation and other line departments that have science, technology and innovation activities. We call it a strategic management model. I'll explain that a little later. And then the process which we believe could help government to make sure that there is a coordination mechanism for the public budget for science, technology and innovation. I will share with you how we have progressed together with National Treasury as well as DPME on how this could be done and could be an excellent instrument to drive science and technology and innovation across government. And then we'll talk about the resourcing of the science, technology and innovation and how we would like to propose that this be done to drive the decadal plan. And then we might give you progress on the STI budget coordination. So we are here today then to share this work with these committees. So I will not go through this in detail. And then, as I've indicated, there are four topics, white paper and decadal plan and thematic priorities will be the first part of the presentation. And then the governance arrangements to support STI across government that we are proposing and that we are refining, a reflection on the financial resources for STI, and then the budget coordination as we indicated. So why did we think we need a new policy document? And it was titled Science, Technology and Innovation that will enable inclusive, sustainable South African development in a world that is changing. So as you can see, three important phrases: inclusive, sustainable development in a world that is changing. So let's probably just spend a bit more time then on what are these changes that were eminent or that we were looking at. The first one is the rapid technological change that requiring new policy responses. I will give you one or two examples in the slides that follow. We are all aware about climate change and environmental degradation. We already see the effects of this in, for instance, KZN disaster. There are many others. Geopolitical instability that we were seeing, and we think this will continue. In fact, at that stage, we didn't even know that there would be war in Ukraine, and therefore 2.5 million people that have crossed the border to Poland. Intractable inequality within and among countries. This continues to be a phenomenon that we see every day. And then, of course, we have our own situation, such as low economic growth that seems to be sitting between 2 to 4%, rising unemployment and inequality, and poor education outcomes, infrastructure backlogs, amongst others. So I just want to give you this example of how society and technology, for instance, is likely to affect mobility in the next coming years. We have been told that some parts of the world want to get rid of internal combustion engines. So these are petrol and diesel engines. Now, this would mean that the fuel infrastructure that we currently have might disappear. This means that the structure of the industry will change quite considerably. The market and user practices will change. Maintenance and distribution network will change. I've been told that the electric vehicles, you don't need to take it for service because there are no components that need you to go and change the oil. The only thing you need to worry about are the brake pads and the maintenance of the battery. We need new regulations and policies. Road and traffic infrastructure, refueling infrastructure is going to change. So this is just one example that shows what could happen or what is in fact happening as we talk in the area of mobility. Now, this is another slide that shows on the left-hand side that we have an established regime in red, and on the right-hand side, a new regime that will come in the next 10 years or so. What that means is that if you see at the bottom, those arrows that are going in different directions, that there are a number of changes that are happening as we speak, and these are driven by pressure on existing regimes, and they open up and create windows of opportunities. And therefore, our role as a Department of Science and Technology within government is to say, what are these new regimes that are in the middle that are likely to disrupt what's happening on the left-hand side to create this new world and this new socio-technical system in the next couple of years? As I've said, I've shown you in the mobility section. This is another slide that shows how, for an example, artificial intelligence is likely to impact a range of sectors, whether it's politics and government, whether it's smart homes, defense, real estate, agriculture, and so forth. So which means that in, for instance, the different committees that are here, we should already be worried about what would be the impact of artificial intelligence in our own sectors, and are we preparing our sector for the impact of artificial intelligence in our sector? So I hope I've given you sufficient reasons as to why then we embarked on the white paper, which was adopted by Cabinet in 2019. And what we are now doing is to develop a decadal plan, which is a medium-term document on what then we need to do, technology focus areas, how, who, resources, risks, and indicators. So what is the philosophy of this decadal plan that we've just completed? It recognizes that South Africa, with its national system of innovation, has pockets of excellence. And I'm sure I don't have to convince this committee about the work that we did during COVID through the network of genomic surveillance that, amongst other things, told the world about the discovery of Omicron. It's just one example of a pocket of excellence within the science system. There are many others, and you will see some of these as we unpack the presentation with one or two examples that will also demonstrate this. The 2019 white paper then signaled a need for us to shift a focus from building the NSI to deriving maximum impact from the system of innovation to help South Africa's challenges. But it does not mean that we will stop continuing to invest in building the national system of innovation. So we want to keep the funding to ensure that we have the right scientists, they have the infrastructure, they are doing cutting edge science, but we also look at how those pockets of excellence can drive innovation to respond to the challenges and the changes in the technology that I've just shared with you. We would like to support institutions and develop research capacity and high-end skills. We'll continue to do that. However, we also want to start to bring social scientists into the programs of the natural scientists in order to address the complex challenges facing South Africa. They will not be solved only by us as natural scientists. We also need to bring in social scientists into the discussion. There are some deliberate transitions that we therefore anticipate in health, education, and energy. And we then want to have a program of how South Africa can manage and navigate through these transitions. And I will give some examples further down the line. So what are the thematic priorities and societal grand challenges that we have identified? Climate change and the circular economy, we think we can begin to use these areas to solve the problem that we have in society. Education for the future. We need to start thinking, how do we educate the young people for the future that we know is going to be completely different than the one of today? What would be societies of the future look like, and what will they be dealing with? ICTs and smart systems in particular, high technology industrialization, nutrition security, water security, health innovation, and sustainable energy. So the National Advisory Council on Innovation performed this foresight study, and they identified these priorities. So in this slide, we're probably just going a little bit more in terms of the detail of what this is. So in climate change, for instance, we have a number of institutions that are doing science to understand the climate change in sub-Saharan Africa and its impact. So we have that information. It can be used to inform key decisions in South Africa, including how, for instance, after the disasters in KZN, we need to start to think differently around where we put human settlements and where we put development projects. We know that there is biodiversity loss, which is extremely important in a country like South Africa, waste pollution and soil erosion, amongst others. Education and skills of the future, we need to be thinking about the skills, both in the high-end skills, but also the skills for the TVET, in the TVET colleges, the skills for the fourth industrial revolution, what curriculum change we need to think about, and also the STI for education and skills development, including how we teach ICTs. And then the future of society, the impact of rapid technological advancement on human and social dynamics, artificial intelligence and ethics, inequality and livelihoods, the social impact of science, trust and national identity, globalization, and so forth, what it means to be a human, what would be the future of work. We need to be worrying about these things and start putting in place measures to address them. Innovation for a healthy population. These health issues include both physical and mental. Continue to build on existing successes whilst focusing on new issues. We are told that we are entering the era of pandemics. And in fact, this is becoming true. Just as we think we're getting out of COVID, we suddenly know that there is another fever from monkeys. Behavioral and societal aspects, including indigenous knowledge systems. We have invested heavily on indigenous knowledge systems over the last 10 years, and we would like to make sure that the health situation in the country can be improved by taking this work to the next level. Innovation for energy security, I will give you some examples on this. And then we also think we need to bring innovation to support a capable and inclusive state. How do we have improved decision making using satellite data? And how do we identify technology that could enhance service delivery? And how can we support local economic development? We've also identified new sources of growth in the areas of circular economy and digital economy. And we are looking at investing in foundational digital capabilities to support digital economy. And then we also think that we need to start a way of focusing on high-tech industries and also supporting the modernization of existing sectors such as mining, agriculture, and manufacturing. And we have already engaged, for instance, with Mineral Council on mining, on how we look at the next generation of mining. We have already engaged the Department of Agriculture, Rural Development to look at the next generation of agriculture. And then on manufacturing, we have identified key areas where we can support moving higher up in the value chain in manufacturing, and of course, taking the 4x multiplier effect when you do that. But these are just slides that give you an example of when you talk about ICT-based applications in the modernization of agriculture, what does it mean? We need to be starting to think about how do we look at digitization and look at the high and volatile input costs in agriculture, and then how do we make sure that we use ICT to manage this. We can also use Internet of Things-based technologies and integrate a number of sensors, satellite drones, and other technologies to assist farmers to monitor their crop improvement and disease diagnostics. And this usually leads to millions of rand lost as a result of not having this intelligence. There's a benefit in generating and maintaining scientifically validated big data knowledge hubs and platforms for predictive modeling surveillance to provide decision-making to farmers. So these are just some of the flavors of the kinds of things that we can do to support agriculture. And in the manufacturing, we can include new ICT-based, for instance, to think about a learning factory, which has already been established at the CSIR, but how do you enable small business, therefore, to adopt the high tech and these new ways of manufacturing? How can we have new thinking for new industries and new thinking for mature industries? And we've already spelled out in the document how we can do this in order to make sure that the GDP contribution that we are deriving out of the work in manufacturing with our colleagues at DTIC and Department of Small Business, how can we do this? And they've agreed to work with us. In the mining, we're looking at how do we deal with increased costs, declining grades, and looking at mining at depths that we are already doing in South Africa and even more, but find innovative, new cost-effective ways to extract the commodities that we have. So we have developed a mining research development and innovation implementation plan that is based on these new technologies. And we've already started with the CSIR, with the Mineral Council to pilot this within the mining industry. We've also identified a number of programs to kickstart a hydrogen society program in South Africa. Today, I just want to share the first two, the Hydrogen Valley or Platinum Valley Initiative, and how we're taking coal, CO2, carbon dioxide, from the coal-fired power stations and see whether we can produce new materials. So I'll just quickly share with you what those are. As part of the Hydrogen Valley Initiative, we have identified a corridor from Durban to Mogalakwena in Limpopo via Johannesburg. And the purpose of this corridor is to identify areas where we can deploy hydrogen fuel cells in order for us to increase the value of the usage of platinum in complete products. I think the next slide will help to illustrate what we mean by this. In Mogalakwena in Limpopo, we would like, and this was done and demonstrated by Anglo-American, where we can have the mining trucks move from diesel engine into hydrogen fuel cell engine. And of course, we can also have a range of heavy duty and materials handling in the area, replacing their diesel engine into hydrogen fuel cells. In Johannesburg, we have identified a range of sectors such as iron and steel, public buildings and buses, and future private building demands, and identify how we can use hydrogen both for power, but also for storage, but also to support those industry as part of creating the demand that you can see on the left-hand side for hydrogen. In Durban, we're looking at heavy-duty trucks along the N3, material handling in the port, and we've already started this conversation with Transnet, and also at the airport, we've already started this conversation with AXA as part of how we can support the buildings that we have with hydrogen to minimize, of course, the greenhouse gas emissions. So this valley and this platinum hydrogen is a program that we hope in the next 10 years will create a new industry in South Africa. This slide just gives you a sense of a roadmap of what we anticipate to do between 21 and 24, where we want to have a small-scale electrolysis production. This is where you produce hydrogen from a variety of sources. And then also to have a 1 megawatt giga hydrogen production that is piloted. And this is scaled up in 2025 with a range of other capacities of electrolysis deployed in the Northern Cape, electrolyzer capacity developed in the Hydrogen Valley, because we will need these electrolyzers producing hydrogen. And then we also have estimated the kilotons of hydrogen that we'll have to produce annually. And then you can see between 2030 and 2040, again, the range of activities that we will be deploying. And this would be in the middle part of the graph show how many buses and trucks we hope to convert, forklifts, refueling stations, and then some industry demonstration partnership with a number of private sector partners. And then same with 2025, 2030, and then the same 2030, 2040. We've also started to say what would be the training and the reskilling of new jobs as part of this program. And we anticipate about 20,000 jobs that would be created annually by 2030, and at least 30,000 jobs created annually by 2040. But those jobs have got to be based on new skills that are associated with this program. The second example is on this slide, where we identify a range of challenges in chemical industry and coal-fired power stations. We have challenges, and we have made commitments in Paris to reduce greenhouse gases. And you can see the commitments that we have made. You can see the pollutants that we are having in the atmosphere as a result of these industries and the environmental crises that are as a result of polluting the environment. So what we are proposing is to take flue gas, the gas that is coming out of these power stations, get hydrogen, as you can see on the slide on the left-hand side, hydrogen and green ammonia, and then take the carbon dioxide from coal, and then we can reduce particulate matter and produce fertilizer and sulfuric acid. So this is a program that we have already started with the private sector, and we are working with the cement factory in Lephalale to try and demonstrate this, and we have started this feasibility study in Mpumalanga around how we can do this. So what this means is that you clean the environment, you, as you take the carbon and you capture and utilize it, you create new products, and hopefully you retain jobs in the meantime. So what are the enablers for the implementation of the Tekettle plan? We have already indicated that there's a science and innovation interministerial committee which is chaired by Minister Nzimande, and this includes a number of government departments, and the purpose of this is to have an innovation and skills compact and ensure that we have innovation enabling programs that will have to be funded and implemented collectively across government. That's essentially what this is about. So the first meeting was held in May or in April. We were directed to do certain things before the next meeting, which we hope we'll have in August, giving feedback to the IMC. Amongst the things that we'll be sharing with them is this budget coordination program and how we are progressing with Treasury to make sure that this is in place and it's part of the medium-term process for allocation budget this year. Once that is done and the IMC has agreed on that, we hope to convene a science and innovation presidential plenary, which will involve government, business, academia, and society to also solicit private sector investment and also soliciting their view about how we can modernize the economy. These slides try to give a sense of what the Presidential Science and Innovation Plenary will be doing, recommending a high-level whole of society SDI agenda, reflect on progress with large and high-profile STI programs and recommended actions. For an example, if there's a presentation on this Hydrogen Society roadmap, if there's a presentation on how we can have a vaccine program, localization program, I will share with you that later on, and the joint commitment on funding if it's done on the first one, and then on the second one, we will have follow-up. And then I've already indicated what the IMC is doing and this Department of Science and Innovation. We will be providing support to these structures. So we will take guidance from the resolutions of the Science and Innovation Interministerial. As I've indicated, the first meeting directed us to do some work. We have already identified some existing structures that we would be working with. At this point in time, we have engagements with the Presidential Commission on Climate Change and other government clusters. I've given you two examples of how in the discussions on just energy transition, we can contribute through the Hydrogen Society roadmap. We also have a range of programs that we have invested in the science of climate change, and we have then been working with them around how these programs can be taken forward in the recommendations that they will be taking to the president. And then we are also working with STI intensive line departments to develop sector strategies and roadmaps as part of the implementation of the Tekettle plan. We lead the development of capabilities to support the relevant master plan. So on the master plans that are already in place, we are identifying STI interventions, and then we have involved STI entities across government at an appropriate level, ARC, MINTEC, CSIR as part of the implementation of this program. We are therefore finalizing these research development and innovation plans in the priorities that I have indicated, and then we are also thinking of M&E indicators. I just wanted to, I think this slide is just talking about what would be the elements of the innovation and skills compact. But the slide that I just thought I would share with you, having talked about the hydrogen society and hydrogen economy, what exactly does one mean? We will, of course, continue to have master's and PhD programs for the hydrogen society. But as a ministry that is linked up to the post-school education and training system, we've identified TVET jobs that would be part of the transition towards a green hydrogen economy. And this is a very exciting program where we have identified that in the jobs portfolio of the sectors that we have identified, and you can see them on the left-hand side, in iron and steel, platinum group metal mining, power generation, fuel cells, and electrolyzers, the new jobs that we think can be created. But most importantly, the TVET jobs. If you deploy a fuel cell, you need somebody to maintain them. You need somebody, if something goes wrong, to fix them. So we've done this modeling work. And again, you can see in the flow chart, the different sub-sectors of these main sectors that we show on the left-hand side. So the key takeaway, as you can see at the bottom, is that the scenario produces a net benefit to the economy via an increased employment of 60,000 TVET jobs. We also hope that we'll create about an economy of 190 billion rands in 2045. And again, we have already indicated those sectors where we think this GDP would be created. We also, therefore, would also arrest IP leakage from publicly funded R&D. We're looking at how we can strengthen that program. We would like to see an increased support for commercialization. With the funds that we have in the Department of Science and Technology, we can't do that. We've demonstrated, for instance, the production of hydrogen fuel cells, but to put them in the market, we would need partnership with the Department of Small Business, Department of Trade and Industry, for an example. We've already started to make contribution to the amendments of public procurement, so that the locally developed technologies are prioritized, and we are improving the capabilities across government to support innovation, as well as to increase the spatial footprint of innovation in South Africa in line with the district development model. So what we are proposing is that we agree on this strategic management model, which I mentioned at the beginning. What you see on the left-hand side is essentially a role that can be played by the Department of Science and Innovation, where we can invest in emerging areas and then do demonstration in these. But in the middle, you can see that there are sector-specific departments, such as health, agriculture, and minerals, must take a lead. And there must be the Department of Science and Innovation can be involved, but not lead. And the same in matured areas. The lead departments need to be the ones taking the leadership, and we will then support. What that means at the bottom is that the green line shows the funding of the Department of Science and Innovation, that we will have a big budget for the emerging areas, some budget for sector-specific activities, but the dotted line shows that we think this will only work if the line departments also earmark money for those areas of innovation associated with their sectors, and also the money that is needed to modernize ways of providing science technology-based standards, such as big data in weather services, the way that you can begin to do forensics in a way that takes into account new and emerging technology. So this is a very important a principle that we are proposing. It's been in principle agreed by the IMC. And then, of course, it means then that the different departments need to earmark a certain percentage of their budget to drive innovation in their sectors. We've done some modeling in terms of ensuring that there is resource mobilization. We've already agreed as government that we would like to have 1.1% of gross expenditure on R&D as a percentage of GDP by 2024 and 1.5% by 2030. and we show the amount of money that translate to 1.1% of gross expenditure on R&D, we would need 61.5 billion. This is both the private sector and the public sector, and 97 billion to meet 1.5% in 2030. The last bullet says that the current gross expenditure on R&D as a percentage of GDP at the moment is less than 1%. So this is exactly the same information that is being provided. It shows that we need 62 billion for 1.1% and 97 billion for 1.5%. This is a slide that shows where we are at the moment, and you can see in 2019-2020 survey that we did, we're sitting at just over 0.6% of gross expenditure on R&D, and you can therefore see that even reaching 1.1% means we have to double the investment that we are already putting on research and development. So we've started then the process of engaging with our colleagues from the Department of Treasury and DPME. But this is just what the problem statement is. There's inadequate support for R&D activities, and funding allocated for STI immediately gets moved to other priorities when there are funding shortfalls. Not all S&T intensive national departments allocate staff to plan and manage their S&TI work. Departments reallocate STI budgets to other priorities later in the year, and public research organizations are increasingly under financial pressure to do consulting rather than investing sufficiently in basic research infrastructure and human resources, because they need money, because the money that is earmarked for them gets taken away. So on the cabinet meeting of the 15th of February 2017, cabinet approved the introduction of a process for the coordination of government's budget. And the STI budget coordination process is a mechanism to improve allocation of funds for STI, and the funds cut across all spheres of government, we would like to suggest, with the objective of assisting departments to implement their STI programs and to improve the productivity and competitiveness of key sectors of the economy. So the national funding will be used to develop the research development and innovation plans to support societal grant challenges. Provincial department funding to be used to support growth and development strategies, and local department funding to be used for supporting innovation for local development priorities and to improve service delivery using innovation. We already have had a number of meetings. We've met with DGs at National Treasury, DPME. We've set up technical working groups with National Treasury to look at how to integrate public STI budget coordination mechanism into the MTEC process. We've done the modeling of what is required. You already know the 62 and the 95 billion. We have done some baseline studies that have been completed, working with GTEC. We have engaged National Treasury and DPME to interface with the MTEC processes functional groups. Technical structures in provincial level and cabinet Lekhutla. We've engaged with DPME on how to integrate STI priorities into the mandate paper, and then the STI budget coordination has been endorsed by the MC. So we hope that national, provincial and local government departments will set aside appropriate percentage of their budgets for STI. And since this process has started this year, we hope next year we'll be able to see how this is going to happen. So the next step is to have this mandate paper approval process, decadal plan priorities to be part of the mandate paper. And we also hope to have the decadal plan STI priorities to be included in the MTEC process, and then the ongoing advocacy and awareness process, and STI priorities to be adjusted annually, we hope, and how we will have agree on a percentage of STI in the mandate paper to achieve the percentage that we would like. So that concludes the presentation, Chair, but I thought I would just quickly show the footprint of the work of the department. I don't anticipate that you'll be able to see the text, which is quite small, but if you look carefully, you will see some small red dots that indicate that even though we don't have a provincial competence as the Department of Science and Innovation, we have projects almost all over the provinces of South Africa. So we thought we'd just show you this. And then again, this shows the white dots and the work that we are doing to support the district development model and the number of projects in the different provinces, perhaps with the bar graph on the left-hand side. The fact that there are more in KZN has got nothing to do with where I come from and the minister. It's just the evolution of these. And then we just wanted to indicate that we have a very vibrant tech localization program where we provide technology assistance at firm level, at sector-wide level. We provide profiling and benchmarking for the companies that are part of this program, and this is hosted at the CSR technology stations, and then we implement resources to support localization program. The idea really is that as a department, we work with knowledge partners to then identify the needs at the firm level, and then we use knowledge to ensure that the improvements by the knowledge partners with the private sector helps them to increase their market share and competitiveness. So we do this at component level, sub-assembly level, subsystems, systems level, and then we work originally and manufacturer to that the
Shanaz, can I check if it's my network or DG's network?
No, I think it's with DG because I also can't hear him now.
Okay. DG, we've lost you there for a second. All right. Could colleagues from the department, any of the DDGs, indicate perhaps if we're able to locate DG because he was in his concluding remarks? Okay. He's back. DG, we lost you right at the end. You were just concluding your remarks.
Yes, thanks very much, Chair. Let me just see if I can get back to the presentation and share it. I think I was on this slide, right? Can you see it?
Yes, DG, we can.
All right, so I was just indicating that we support the companies at different subsystem, system, sub-assembly. We work with state-owned enterprises, and then we hopefully help the companies to get into global markets. So this is one company in KZN called GB Bearings, and the company manufactures white metal bearings for heavy industrial applications. And this technology assistant package was provided to this company. And the project involved local experts from DUT as well as foreign experts from the UK. So it's a local design. And this just gives you a sense of the increase in turnover as a result of the interventions, the potential return on investments, the number of jobs that have been created through this program. So we really even track what the program is doing. So these are some of the outcomes in terms of what we have done. Support provided to us, the development of new products, companies where export capability was developed, import substitution, companies gaining work from state-owned companies and OEMs as a result of this. Some companies supported where work has been retained and the creation of jobs and retained jobs in these companies as a result of the program. So, Chair, I think this is where I'd like to stop. This is just some detail around the feedback that we've heard from the IMC, and we would be more than happy with the DSI team to take questions, points of clarity, and I hope I've been able to be clear. I know that I had to go quickly with some of the slides, but I hope the message came out clearly. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Dijin Dwaha, for that presentation. In fact, as you were presenting, we were thinking to ourselves, perhaps there are some committees we may have left out, such as maybe those that are focusing on water, energy, minerals, agriculture, human settlements, etc. But I think, as we had indicated earlier on, this is the first of perhaps maybe two meetings that we could have, or three, that we could have around this matter. Thank you very much, DG, for that presentation. At this point, honorable members, I'd like to take hands of members who would like to engage, questions, recommendations, comments. I see the hand of Honorable McKessie, Honorable Tembegwayo, Hunabalt, Ishmael, Mananiso, Jacobs, Graham Murray, Chirwa, Matumba, Hicklin, Siwela, Boshoff, Butelezi, and Kasa. Litsiye, Ngamashe. Okay. We'll leave it at that for now.
Sorry, Chair, for interjecting. I think you missed my name somewhere.
We've captured you, Honorable Jacobs.
Oh, didn't hear you. Thanks.
Okay, that's fine. All right, so then we'll take Honorable McKessie. You may go ahead.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to everyone. And I would also like to thank the DG for the presentation. I just want to find out, I know that you just mentioned that, you know, agriculture has been left out, but given the fact that the Department of Science and Innovation, they came up with genomic surveillance, as the DG said, and that was crucial because at that particular moment, the research of COVID-19 was taking place, and basically it took preference over, you know, what I would assume that they were doing at that particular moment. So given the fact that now we have an issue of a shortage of fertilizer, and we're going to be facing a food crisis very soon, is there anything that the government is intending to do, or this department is intending to do, to circumvent the prices of fertilizers and food crisis by coming up with, you know, I know you're talking about innovation in terms of producing fertilizers, but I don't think at the moment the formula or the method, the recipe to be able to produce fertilizers is out. Will you be speeding up that so that we can be able to once again be the producers of fertilizers as we used to be? Because from my understanding, I think South Africa used to basically produce 80% of the fertilizer that they were producing, they were keeping the country and they were working 20%, but now we are importing 80% of fertilizer. So I just want to find out if there is any intervention that's going to be coming out of this department to ensure that we do produce fertilizer. And also with the
Honorable Makesi, we've lost you. So perhaps I'll go on to Honorable Tembegwayo, and then we'll go back to Honorable Makesi at a later stage.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want some clarity to say why are we invited and what is our exclusive, you know, the role that we are supposed to play here, you know, because you have invited all of us to this and it's all about the white paper that is being read to us. But be it the case, I just want to ask the presenter specifically on the STI programs highlighted in Decatur plan, as he was discussing that, with specific reference to large STI programs, innovation for a healthy population, where there's a mention of pandemics and indigenous knowledge systems to improve the health situation. And the presenter mentioned taking the process to the next level. My question is, which is the present level and what was your contribution with regards to COVID-19 situation? And what is that next level that he was talking to us about? I didn't get such a clarity on this information pertaining to the COVID-19 situation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Tembegwayo. Honorable members, Honorable Chira has kindly requested if she may come in. She urgently needs to take her son to the doctor. And I think that that is a fair request from Honorable Chira. So if it's okay with you, Honorable Groenewald, I will at this point allow for Honorable Chira to ask her question. Honorable Chira, you may go ahead.
All right, thank you so much, Chair, and sorry to the speakers that were supposed to go before me. Good morning to everyone, and thank you so much for the presentation as well. I think, you know, for me in particular, I haven't fully grasped what exactly is the process of going on about this, but I'll give myself time and just go through the presentations again. But I think the questions that I want to ask for now is when do these pilots that you speak about in the mining sector, when do the pilots begin? I think it's important for us to not only have access to how they go about, but also be able to monitor them and what is being achieved or what is being sought after to be achieved. And I also want to ask if what's the impact of our energy circumstance or energy status in the country will have on this particular project or innovation. For instance, we were having a lot of talks about beneficiation only to find that it's not something that's possible within our class because of our energy crisis with Eskom and load shedding and all of those things. Is there an energy threat? I think that's pretty much what I'm asking in regards to seeing this innovation take place, in regards to the pilot, in regards to it being a challenge that you foresee. And lastly, I would like to find out about the environmental impact. I'm asking this because as you're doing the presentation, it sounds as if there's an environmental benefit, but as you continue, then I'm having a few questions about that as well. What is the health impact? What is the environmental impact? What is the health impact on those working within the mining sector, for example, and with this particular innovation? So I'm still trying to grasp my head around what exactly is being proposed or is being presented, to be quite honest with you, but these are the questions that suffice in the interim or for now, if I may. Thank you so much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chira. Honorable Groenewald.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll keep it short. There's a lot of hands. It's only pertaining to questions in terms of the funding model that it has been presented. I think it's a little bit over-ambitious in terms of local government. I serve on a COGTA committee, and there's a lot of municipalities already under constraints in terms of their finances, unfunded budgets, and so forth. How is the department going to look in terms of their funding model and in terms of local government, how it will be relevant for them to contribute money as well? Firstly, and secondly, isn't there other departments like, for example, the ARC in JB Marks, I know is underutilized. Isn't there a possibility we can use those departments as well to get some of the research done for innovation? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Groenewald. Honourable Ishmael.
Good morning and thank you. I have a major network problem here, so I apologize upfront in case I get cut off. I just want to say thank you for the presentation, and you know, I'm very interested in the health aspect of this. Now, we recently had an excellent robotics intervention in the Western Cape, you know, and this really helps in the health sector. You know, most especially since we have a shortage of medical resources and we really need more of this type of intervention. Now, I also need, you know, some clarity on where we are with regard to this type of innovation, where the department is actually looking at this type of innovation. We also need some intervention with regard to training of more medical professionals, you know, as we see lots of our medical students are actually having to go to other countries to study medicine. We're importing critical skills from other countries, and, you know, we should have some strategy in place with the Department of Innovation and Education and the health, you know, sector to be able to actually enhance medical training according to the needs of this country. But however, going on into the aspect of the presentation, I just have a few questions. One is I want to ask about the sustainability of these plans, you know, due to the issues that we have in this country, most especially with regard to load shedding, and how this crisis will actually impact the innovation capability of the state. And Innovation Compact, I just want to ask two questions. Has the framework for the Innovation Compact been finalized? And what are the specific commitments and actions attached to the Innovation Compact thus far? And reality is that what progress has been made with restructuring the Department of Science and Innovation and its programs to realize the needs of the SAI decadal plan? Thank you so much.
Apologies for that. Thank you very much, Honorable Ishmael. Honorable Mananiso.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me start by welcoming the presentation. And one would want to applaud the committee for actually facilitating this particular session, because we believe that STI is a cross-cutting and mainstreaming issue. So it is important that we take everyone along in terms of ensuring that they prioritize or budget for STI into their spaces. Chair, one wants to as well applaud the department with regards to their program in terms of the Innovation Compact. And I'm happy that the last speaker just spoke before me indicated on issues that one would need clarity on, time frames, issues of specific actions and outcomes that they can report to us, and as well things that one would want to know in relation to the progress to date. And Chairperson, I like to as well want to thank them for actually thinking of issues of engendering the innovation, because at times we believe that gender transformation in general is for specific department, but we can see here at least the department is ahead in terms of ensuring that they include everything on their plans. Chair, lastly, my issue is with regards to the budget allocation challenges. I just want to check with them, do they have any mitigation plans to ensure that at least the budget is efficient for their plans to be sustainable? And that's it from me. And I want to check with them, like, lastly, with regards to engagement with other departments that didn't attend their meeting that they once were invited on. do they have plans in terms of making follow-ups that they bring them along, so that next time when we get presentation, we are able to check other departments that we feel that they are so important to ensure that they budget for science innovation into their spaces. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mananiso. Honorable Jacobs.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you once again for setting up this meeting and having so many of the portfolio committees present here. Of course, science and innovation cuts across so many of the sectors, in fact, all sectors of life. And therefore, it makes absolute sense that you would have invited these portfolio committees, and we would hope in the future also the other portfolio committees, but also for the opportunity that it is giving us who have never had an engagement with science and innovation to be able to get an understanding of where things are going. We do understand that, for example, the 4IR is on the doorstep, that the world is changing very rapidly. Indeed, it has done so over the past 10 years. And there would be a rapid escalation of change for people in general, whether we're now talking about health outcomes, or we're talking about education outcomes, or even just job opportunities, employment, etc. And all of this is being impacted upon by the changes which are happening, and our people, of course, would not be able to stay on par with these changes unless we have these kinds of interactions and discussions where information is shared. Also, thank you very much to the DG for the presentation. It's very informative for us who have not engaged with it before. It is wonderful to see the work that is going into the planning of the next 10 years of South Africa and the lives of South Africans. And also to know the key interventions, for example, in the Innovation Compact, which are being raised, which are good initiatives in getting these policies aligned to common innovations in the world and in South Africa, indeed. And then also on the decadal plan and the white paper, which is very commendable, and especially the intention of increasing expenditure on research and development in terms of the percentage that is of GDP that is spent by departments. And we note this 1.1% of GDP for 2024, by 2024, and 1.5% of GDP in the next decade. So from ourselves as the portfolio committee, myself personally, love to learn more, hear more, participate more, and wish the department well with the plans which they presented to us today. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Jacobs. Honorable Graham Murray.
Can you hear me, Chair?
Yes, ma'am, we can.
Okay, thank you. Sorry. Please apologize. Please accept my apology. I'm sitting at the airport, so I apologize if there's a lot of background noise. Chairperson, first of all, thank you for the opportunity and for inviting Public Works and Infrastructure. We really appreciate the opportunity to engage. I want to start off first, though, speaking as somebody from my constituency that's based in the Eastern Cape, that's predominantly rural. The presentation spoke about future-proofing education and skills as part of the policy development. And what I wanted to say is when you have rural schools, a lot of the schools have things like biblical studies and math lit, and they're not offering science and innovation focused subjects. So what I wanted to ask is whether or not they would look at possibly doing a streaming mechanism. In the past, years ago, and I feel like when Noah fell off the ark when I was at school, they did assessments on kids, they did IQ tests, and they established that a lot of children were underperforming who were super intelligent because they were bored in class, because they weren't getting the correct sort of education to feed their intelligence. So they were losing those kids in the process. What we could possibly look at is doing a similar thing, going in and assessing kids for math and science acumen, and then looking at streaming. So sitting up at school in a district that focuses on math and science, or alternatively using TVET colleges to allow kids to go for extra classes, so that we're not losing those kids in the system by under-educating them. Also, we've got TVET colleges. We've got a fantastic TVET college in Crawford Neck, where I live. These kids are doing security and HR. We don't even have big corporates in our area. So they're learning skills that they're not going to be able to apply. So we need to look at the kind of skills that are being offered at TVET colleges so that we can start growing kids into this future-based environment with fourth industrial revolution. I also noticed on that last slide with the map that there were two little white dots in my district, in the Sarah Bosman district. There is very little that's been done in the inside of the Eastern Cape. So we're seeing very, very little science and technology innovation happening in that area. And yet we've got industry there that could possibly link in with the department. Montego Foods, the biggest dog food supplier in the country, is based in Crawford Neck. We could be partnering with companies like that to do science and innovation. And then finally, we have an entity called Agrimar as part of public works and infrastructure. And I know my colleague Maddie Hickson is going to speak after me, and she's passionate about Agrimar. But just one of our biggest issues with Agrimar is they have this amazing, innovative drive where they're developing new building methods and alternative construction methodologies. They don't market themselves. And possibly this is another way that your department can partner with the other departments, where you're actually also marketing innovation out of other departments as part of your sort of package of offerings. So that's fine. So thank you very, very much for a very interesting presentation.
Thank you very much, Honorable Graham Murray from the A. I'd like to note Honorable Anthony Matumba.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Chair. Firstly, I would like to agree that we need these departments must work with Treasury to develop legislation on technology, because you have companies that are making money online here in South Africa but not paying tax. So we need to have such laws to govern these companies. But let's go to technology first. I think we, looking at the presentation, I think we are ahead of ourselves, because we are speaking of things that are ahead, but we don't have basic technological infrastructure. For example, you have places in South Africa where there's no network at all. People can't even make a phone call. I mean, those are the things we should have been starting with. We should have been starting by connecting our people, because you can't speak of like page 13, supporting local economic development, if one can't even have an internet case because there's no network. So those are the basics we should have been talking about, because currently what we are doing, we are relegating IT development to international companies. We should have been learning from China that if ever we are to be sanctioned tomorrow, can we operate without Google technology? Can we operate without Microsoft technology? Can we operate without Apple technology? Because you go to these municipalities, you find that all of them, they are, or departments, in fact, majority of them, for their cloud services, they are relying on international companies. So it can't be that we are a government that rely on on outside companies for our data, for cloud services. we are having a meeting here on Zoom. You are to look who owns Zoom. You'll find that someone out there is looking into our meeting because they own the company. So these are the simple things that we should have been having by now. This is the technology we should have been talking about. Now, secondly, we can talk of investing, but if we don't have what we call massive protected industrial development, nothing is going to work. Those 20,000 jobs we are saying we are going to create, we are going to lose them 3 days after if China is to enter into the same business or if America is to enter into the same business. Let me give an example. We opened Mara, a smartphone manufacturer there in Durban. It had to close down because it couldn't compete with Xiaomi from China. They made the same cheap cell phone and they were more cheaper than Mara, so Mara was left out. We as the country couldn't protect our own job from Xiaomi. So if part of the priority, we must say this, we must prioritize on that to say we are going to protect our IT industry. Because we can have all ideas we can, but we can't compete with international companies. Means our government must protect us. Our government must do what former president of America did to Huawei when he was protecting Apple. So we need to be like that when it comes to our own company. Lastly, we speak of fourth industrial revolution as if it's something that is coming, and it's something that is already here. Our people are waiting for applications. Our people are waiting for Uber. Our people are waiting for Bolt. They're waiting for an app. So this thing is here, and we must accept that we are late. We can't say education for the future. Which future? Because the future is now. Lastly, Chair, I just forgot to put it. When we were applying for SASSA 350, SASSA didn't have the capacity. Their website didn't have capacity to hold more than 5,000 people. Now, it just goes back to technological infrastructure we do not have. So it all boils down to one thing. Let's look into basic technology that we must use. Let's build infrastructure that is needed now, because the technology that we are talking or will use in the future, we can't use it if we don't have primary or basic infrastructure. Currently, private sector is taking over the fiber technology. We'll be relying on them. And it should have been government that should have been at the forefront of fiber technology. But even that, we are relegating it to a private sector. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Matumba. Honorable Hicklin.
Thank you so much, Chair, and thank you so much for the presentation. Yes, as Honourable Graham Murray said, I am very passionate about the Agrimar SA, which is part of the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure. Agrimar SA's mandate is to certify innovative building technology that is produced in South Africa and created in South Africa to international standards. They are the most innovative certifier of innovative building technologies, and their biggest problem is that there is no transverse link that markets these remarkable green building technologies that are created at the Eric Malorbi Hub, or not created, but that are certified at the Eric Malorbi Hub in Tshwane. These technologies are remarkable, And we really need to be able to market these building technologies that are locally produced, locally thought out, for use across the whole of South Africa, because they, in many, many instances, can reduce our carbon footprint at the same time as creating hundreds, if not thousands, of jobs. Using waste material many times, and they are energy saving, they are phenomenally innovative. We need to be able to put them into tender specifications because they can advance South African technologies in housing, in land use, and reducing landfills at the same time. And these are really innovative solutions to our housing needs, human settlement needs, and waste disposal needs in this country. And we really need Agrimar SA to be brought into the 21st century because their products are incredible, and yet they are the best kept secret in South Africa because their marketing is just not up to scratch, and they are not known by our very own government and by our own very departments that are in the construction industry. And if there is a way in which all the departments, human settlements, construction, anyone in within government can actually be made known, Agrimar SA can be made known to them, it would be phenomenal for South Africa, locally, nationally, regionally, and in fact internationally. It would be an amazing step for South Africa, but also for the rest of the world, because they play such a key role in innovative construction technologies in the whole of this country, and their technology is highly impressive. Their certification is on a par with SABS certification, and they do actual construction of buildings that have withstood the test of time for upwards of 10 years. And yet I guarantee you there's not a single solitary person other than the representatives of the DPWI who are on this platform at the moment that actually know of them. And we really need, as a national government and as innovators going into the fourth industrial revolution, going into the future, going into the decadal plan, who actually know of them. And we really need to make use of the technologies that they have to boost them and to boost our ability as innovative South Africans. And I'll leave it there. Thank you so much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Hicklin. Honorable Siwela.
Thanks, Chairperson. I would like to appreciate the invitation. I'm attending for the first time. Let me also appreciate the presentation by the DG and also support other speakers, Chair. I think as a Chairperson of Small Business, I'm highly impressed, but my request is the issue of coordination on issues of budget, since the presentation speaks about the coming financial year 2023 to 2024, so that we were taken on board, all of us. I heard that a presentation has been made with the treasurer, but I believe all departments affected in this regard need also to include that particular request, so that when we go for our APP, the department is taken on board. I don't know whether at the level of cabinet, our department is also included, because it should start there. and then come to us. Should have known the intention. I should have also requested the DG to be part of us. But I'm leaving it in your hands, Chair. I support the issue of pieces of legislation and also to be proactive, as other speakers have said. We are affected by issues of network in our rural areas. So to be able to join this initiative, let us involve our municipalities and make sure that basics on issues of infrastructure is there to be able to move forward. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Siwela. Honorable Boshoff.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I just want to focus on one little thing, and that is around the Hydrogen Society. It's of particular interest to me, and I want to illustrate it with a simplified story, and that is when Outtown had problems with its water system, with the pipe bursting every time, and every time that you repair it, it bursts again because it's old and it's been outdated and so on. Then there was a big agricultural development with a much bigger pipeline being erected, and it basically superseded the previous problem. It didn't solve it. It made it irrelevant. And the whole story about hydrogen, especially green hydrogen powered by or driven by renewables, is to me the same story that we can keep on, you know, fighting and quibbling over Kusile and Medupi and so on. But one of these days it will be economical just to switch it off because we have better solutions. What I want to know in that regard, to try to realize whether I am correct to think that it will go that way. In the slide on the Hydrogen Society roadmap, the DG, if I remember correctly, said in 2025 some 100 buses and 20 forklifts, and I can't remember how many heavy trucks will be powered by hydrogen. And it is especially Anglo, who is a partner in this, in their platinum mines. And I want to know whether to do that will be part of their contribution. In other words, it's not cheaper, but they invest in the whole technology and the development of it. Or are they on their way doing it because it makes direct financial sense? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Boshoff. Honorable Buthelezi.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Honorable Members. Good morning, DG and the team. Thank you very much for having us in this session. Let me start by commending you, Chairperson, for having thought of this for obvious reason that science and technology is cut-crossing and it affects all of us. And thank you, the DG, Dr. Mdjwaga, for a very useful presentation. My preamble will be to say it's a good start, and as the Chinese say, a journey of 1,000 miles start with the first step. So I think we're in a good position, and then it got all of us thinking about our role in this process. Obviously, Chairperson, I come from the Standing Committee on Appropriations, and therefore dealing with budget. One thing I would just like to say is that contrary to the popular view, when people always think that money and budget is the panacea of everything, we like to say money is an enabler. It's a means to an end, not an end in itself. It is a necessary but not sufficient condition. So many other things should happen after money. But from our side, it's a good initiative, an initiative that together with Treasure would like to support, because we don't have future without science and technology. So if we need to guarantee our future, it's very important that we should also be embracing science and technology. Having said that, I think, as I said, all departments should be here, all portfolio committees have got a role to play. But I just wanted to pick up one department which I think you should consider, Chairperson, to invite, is the Department of Defense. Why defense? I think we know that many discoveries and initiatives in the world that end up being used by civilians, that's where they start. So the question, DG, is there any perhaps, are there any initiatives that you are having with the Department of Defense? And usually they are not meant to be shared with us, but I just want to get to that principle without getting into nitty-gritties of those initiatives. Then another thing which is important on these things, we can have the whole wish list of the things that we need to have, but it's also very important to prioritize, looking at the importance of the initiative. They are all important, but obviously when we prioritize, we say what is more important than the other. I would like to point you, DG, and the oral members, which I think one area that we should be really looking at is the question of what we do with the carbon capture technology. That is not just critical, it's very urgent. Why is that urgent? I think it will, it's one of the things which will secure our access to electricity. As you know that the coal-fired power stations are said to be the biggest greenhouse gas emission source in our country. So carbon capture technology is very important, DG, because it will ensure that at the end of the day, we end up having the security of energy, which is an important enabler for many things that we want to do. I think our members here have said a lot about what we are not able to do because of lack of security of energy. So I'm just saying that one of the priorities that we would like to see coming from yourself, working with obviously there are other departments, and in particular minerals and energy, is the fast tracking of the carbon capture technology, so that you can be assured that we'll be able to use coal going forward, because this is one of the biggest resources that this country has. The rush to other sources of energy, of generating electricity, may lead this country to a cliff that we'll never be able to get out of. But having said that, we are worried about the impact of greenhouse gas emissions, and therefore prioritization of this will definitely help a big deal. DG, I working with the departments, I do have a hypothesis which says that as things stand now, the departments should be having those budgets. They may not be called science and technology budget, but for instance, they'll have a training budget, they'll have a technology education budget, and so on. And I think if they were to sharpen their pens, and if they do believe that this is important, I think there's something that they can get from their budget as their budgets stand today. So I think that's an error. We shouldn't necessarily be waiting for a science and technology budget line in their budget. I think the question to them, where can you get some money so that we can start funding some of these things? I'm saying that, honorable members, because we know that there is a budget constraint, but also, as I'm saying, that if you look at the budgets of the departments, and I think the oral members here from different committees working with their department should push for that to say, show us, because this area of budget is so important. Where can you get some resources from the existing budget? Lastly, Chairperson, it has been said that cannabis has many health benefits, and as we know, it has taken the world by storm. So the question of health and agriculture comes in here. Lesotho and Canada are very much involved, but we are lagging behind. I'm choosing cannabis, Chairperson, as an area of which I would like to direct this research or science and technology to, because one, it's an area of growth, but secondly, it's an industry where most of our people have been involved for centuries in that industry, and it has got that ability to jumpstart their economies, local economies, rural economies. So have you looked into this area, DG? And if not, it's one area again which I would say please focus in it, because it has got a lot of positive multiplier effects for rural economies, for black economic empowerment, for the economy in general, and for employment creation. But thank you very much, Chairperson, for having us in this platform. I think it has been very helpful.
Thank you very much, Honorable Buthelezi, for that. Honorable Kasa.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'll almost be repeating what other members have indicated. One, the portfolio committee, thinking that we should come together as we are, and for the DG to make this good presentation. So for me, what is important is sharing of information, especially by members of parliament at an early stage, because if we look at it, there's this interministerial task team. After its first meeting, then we get the information. I think we should be very grateful about that one. And we're still looking forward to the next meeting. In other words, this is work in progress. Some of us who are doing oversight, it is always good to ask questions that are informed rather than just ask questions. But a lesson from here, for instance, for the presidency in the form of the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation, COGTA, as part of this cooperative governance, I think they should be learning some lessons. We appreciate the active involvement of Treasury in terms of coordinating budget. In other words, for us as COGTA, a lesson would be, we have got this DTM that says we want one plan at the level of the district, one budget. You see, as somebody who has been involved in some of this, I thought this is going to be very difficult to produce one budget. So this is a good initiative to indicate or inform the rest of other government departments, because people like to stick with their budgets. They want to make sure that they procure for whatever activity, whether it happens at the local government, at the community level. And that is why we have some of these challenges that we are confronting. When people talk procurement, it's associated with corruption, because everybody wants to say, this is my budget. But in reality, this is the budget of the people of South Africa. So I think we are going to learn lessons from Finance and Technology, bringing in Treasury, and coming up with something that talks, in other words, this budget, not new money. It's money that has been everywhere and at times not properly used. So in other words, it's coordinating whatever effort. And I'm saying these would be lessons for us. So I will now no longer say, how is it going to be achieved, this thing of one budget at the level of a district municipality? We'll say there's an example of science and technology engaging everybody. So thank you very much for the session. And I think Honorable Guterres is right. I assume this is the first meeting, and picking from what the DG was saying, other DGs as well might be tied up to say, this time is your turn to come and present to this kind of a forum. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Khaza. Honorable Itiye.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning to everybody on the platform, the DG of Science and Innovation, the team from Science and Innovation Department, all chairpersons of too many committees that are here, all members of Parliament, and everybody else on the platform. Good morning, Chair. Having listened to the DG, I would like to make a proposal to maybe the DG, maybe we must have a, I don't know, management of some sort. All committee chairs with the DG, and we identify R&D projects or research and development projects in all different portfolios, portfolio committees or departments. And then the departments then go, the portfolio committees then go to the departments to get these projects ring-fenced for R&D specifically, so that when there is a financial pressures and something must be reprioritized, this money for R&D is not touched. So that is the first proposal that I think we need to make in this platform. To DG, a lot of our departments continue to use so-called industrial revolution technologies even today, and you know, it makes it difficult for this country, you know, to compete with first world countries, because there are, some of them are even moving towards the fifth industrial revolution, are thinking about it. Rona was still on the second industrial one. The Department of Science and Innovation must assist us quickly in making sure that we speed up the process of moving from 2IR to 4IR. For an example, I'm not sure how many clinics we have in this country. Dr. Jacobs, maybe you know. But if you go to a clinic in your constituency now, they will tell you about opening of some file. You open that file, it's manual. They must write your name on a piece of paper somewhere. And then you happen to be lucky to go home in KZN, Limpopo, Eastern Cape, or wherever. Then when you arrive there, you get sick. you can't access the medical history on the system of this patient, which that clinic must now rely on the honesty of this particular patient at that clinic. So that is second industrial revolution example that I'm talking about. And if we're on the fourth industrial, we have this thing on a paperless, you go to Cape Town, you just punch the ID, it gives the medical history of this particular person. This is just one example of moving from second industrial revolution to fourth industrial revolution. And I believe DG, the R&D department or the R&D unit of the department should be able to assist departments like health with that one. I know Honorable Thembe Kwayo would have asked, why are we here? You know, I've just made an example intentionally on health so that at least we're on the same page. These are some of the things I think DG, you guys, when you sit with what I've just proposed, the chairs, you know, some management committee of some sort, ad hoc something, or you have a portfolio committee chairs with yourselves from the department and you identify, you know, for me, this should be low hanging fruits, man. Identify quickly, ring fence them so that when we have financial difficulties and some money needs to be reprioritized, those ones are not touched. But I felt I must just make an example also of moving from two IR to four IR quickly, making sure that, you know, we were quick, man. We were able to compete with other countries. Chair, without wasting time, those would have been my two contributions. And thank you very much for an opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Itzie. Honorable Ngamashe?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Am I audible?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. No, thank you very much. Well, I think the first thing to do, I should also join in welcoming the report, which was quite comprehensive. Given by the DG, Dr. Mtuaha. Are there other people who are contributing?
Apologies for that. There was a mic that was open here. Okay. I think we managed to close it. Apologies for that.
Okay. No, thank you very much. I think, Chair, the first thing to do in welcoming the report is also to acknowledge the South African high level or high standard capability in terms of innovation, science and innovation. And the case at hand is around the issue around vaccines and so on. It has just demonstrated that Africa is an emerging force to reckon with, which I think is something that we must equally be very serious about. In this regard, Chair, obviously we should welcome all mitigation innovations against the negative effects, you know, of climate change, because, you know, is this greenhouse or the dangers of greenhouse gas emissions are a reality, and they are contributing negatively to climate change. So any innovations that are there, we should really welcome with warm hands. Be that as it may, there are issues around the protection of exclusive rights, especially of rights of ownership by originators and or inventors. Because more often, you will find that those who originate or invent some of these innovations are ordinary people with extraordinary capabilities. And in the process, they get exploited by big corporates and conglomerates. For instance, you know, the classical case at hand, I just can't help but really to refer to the Vodacom. It may look very simple. Very young fellow makes this innovative invention. The next thing, he now had to undergo a very protracted audacious journey to prove against this big giant, even when all facts have been against this giant. But you can see the power of capital. So it's something that we must really look at, and our policy compendium must be such that it's able to protect our people from such exploitations. And it should also talk to our incubation programs. I'm happy that DG, among other things, in terms of the human capital development, you made mention of universities and TVET colleges and opportunities for masters and PhDs. Because for all these programs to be sustainable, you really need a very strong human capital. So in this case, that human capital must also be attached to an incubation program so as to ensure that all the necessary checks and balances are put in place to protect the exclusive rights of those who have managed to have this kind of contribution to invention and innovation. The second part, Honorable Chair, it will talk to the extent to which we create conditions and or environment for industrialization opportunities. And when we talk about industrialization opportunities, we should also look at the opportunities that are linked to African Continental Free Trade Area. Because as a continent, I believe that we should talk about, should maximize the extent of syndication of capabilities as a region and as a continent. Because if we can look at that, you'll find that in most sectors or areas, because of lack of innovation, invention, especially on the part of manufacturing, we end up exporting raw material, which will be processed elsewhere. and be brought back to the country at a high value. So what we need to do is also to look into internal programs. When I say internal, I'm not just referring to South Africa, but I'm looking at the continent where we are able to produce raw material, process it through our own inventions and innovations, so that by the time it gets to the market, it's a finished product. Because exporting raw material, we are actually exporting jobs. And in that way, it's a defeatist approach to our localization policy, industrialization policy, and all those kind of instruments that are aimed at ensuring that we create opportunities for our own people. So it's important that we also look at the value chain in its entirety and locate these innovation and invention initiatives within that particular industrial value chain. So in that regard, as a member of the Committee for Trade, Industry and Competition, those are the areas that we'll be looking at, which also we should look at the challenges of economic concentration. How do we break those exclusionary institutionalized barriers which continue to deprive our people or put them in the periphery, so that we design such policy compendia that is able to create those opportunities which ensure that the economic concentration is actually deconcentrated. It provides access to all our people. It's more inclusive, because that's how we will be able to make sure that we don't create a state of conglomerates or oligarchs who have this super profit, if I may put it that way, in while we have the majority of the African people hobnobbing in the pool of misery. So those are some of the balances we have to look at, so as to ensure that in this 10-year period, by the end, when we look back and reflect, we can see a significant difference in changing the lives of our people. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mamashe. Honorable Kruger.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, DG, for the very informative presentation. And good morning, all the colleagues from a very cold Mpumalanga. Madam Chair, small business is definitely always have a problem with new policies and innovation theories in technology, because of the fact that big business always use the red tape around entering this type of businesses, because there's enormous red tape around it, and big business use it as a competitive advantage above small businesses, and small businesses struggle very much to get into the business and the benefits of of such technology and innovation. So that's the one problem, and I would like to ask the DG to have a look at how we can reduce red tape to make it much easier for small business to enter the space. The second question and favor I want to ask the DG is if it's possible to bring this presentation to small businesses, the Small Business Development Committee, and bring it down to where small business will be applicable and where will they have opportunities into the space. So I would like to invite the DG to give us a presentation in our committee, because I think and I know that small business can play a huge role in rolling out this policy. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Claire. Honorable Mashati.
Thank you very much, Chair, and good morning to yourself and all the chairs of different portfolio committees with us today and all members. And a very good morning to DG and the DSI team. Chair, I've got only three things to speak to in relation to the presentation. Maybe one should also join the queue that really appreciates the work that DSI is doing. They are actually our, you know, they're doing quite well as a department, not only at the level of presenting, but we must indicate that this is one department that has been able to, you know, bring clean audits for consecutive years and being very, you know, doing quite well. But Chair, getting into the issues, one, I just want to find out from DG, given the presentation and all the activities that have been presented before us, do we really have the skill sets that are necessary to ensure that these activities do take place over and above issues of budget? And I'm aware that in the presentation there were issues relating to higher education, in as far as, you know, your PhD, your master's and so forth and so on. But in relation to the work that needs to happen, you'd also need the involvement of TVET. Is higher education working? We know you are sister departments, but you're two different departments. Are we working together to ensure that what we intend to have is being produced via your TVET and higher education department? Chair, because as we transit towards new technologies, this issue of moving from, like Honorable Lise was indicating, your 2IR to 4IR, it will affect the workforce. With the current workforce that we have, will these new technologies not impact or affect the workforce we have? And will we be able to skill and reskill the ones that we have currently so that we don't lose jobs? My second issue is around the departments themselves. What is the receptive mood by other departments? Here's this white paper that requires everybody to be an active participant in the process. But what is the mood from other departments? Because it will be necessary for us as a collective, as different portfolio committees, as different department to gel, to work together in ensuring that we really see the end product of this beautiful presentation. Second last issue, Chair, is around the role of private sector. Yes, government must drive these initiatives, but on our own, government on its own, it will not be able to finance all initiatives. As President has indicated that there's a need for us to build this social compact. Are we actually having positive reception from private sector itself in relation to this? The last issue, Chair, is just to make an emphasis on what other honourable members have indicated, that there's a need to have a roadmap. Since science affects everybody and it cuts across different departments, we should be having a roadmap that in the next 6 months we're able to monitor the work that we have done together with other portfolio committees. And also, we need to equally encourage other departments to go beyond what DSI has proposed. Most probably, there are other avenues that we can look into, but we need to bring them to the fore and say, beyond this, what else can you do? Coming to the issue of climate change, Chair, Honorable Buthelezi indicated a very significant issue around issues of climate change, that these initiatives are meant to mitigate climate change. And those who were in the House yesterday would have noticed that we have the House approved an ad hoc committee on climate change. This clearly indicates to us that, you know, even Parliament itself sees the dangers of climate change, and therefore we need to pull together to ensure that this particular presentation sees the light of day. It does not end on a paper or on the screen that we have seen it on today. Thank you very much, Clark.
Thank you very much, honorable members. Thank you very much, Honorable Mahlatsi. One must really appreciate the different inputs that members from different committees have brought forth. It always is a real great learning experience, I think, for all of us. I firstly want to perhaps remind us of how we got in. I think I was quite clear in my opening remarks to say that when we do our oversight work, we need to be able to also check with entities and departments where they are struggling in bringing forth or in following through on the mandate that we've given them. And I think DG Mdjwakha, as you reflect and you bring forth your responses, you will indicate whether or not this activity or exercise that we've just embarked on has in any manner been, well, has in any form assisted you in the work that you are doing. And I really want to implore on you, DG, that as you make your concluding remarks and you respond to members, that the same way you are quite clear in giving us umphako as a committee, that you are also quite clear to members what assistance you would require and what support you would require from these committees as motive forces going forward in terms of, for example, the finalization of the decadal plan and a number of other matters that you have already spoken to in the initial presentation that you made. Right. So firstly, I think if I were to speak on matters that really came out during our Northern Cape oversight visit, firstly was the matter around education, and I think Honorable Graham Murray spoke to this, around the responsiveness and relevance of the curricula that we have, particularly in rural schools. And we know, honorable members of this committee, that when we were in Carnarvon, was it Sutherland? I think it was Sutherland. Sutherland is where SALT is, right? Yeah. When we were in Sutherland, we had an experience where we were advocating for young girls and boys who come from Sutherland, who come from Carnarvon, to be the ones who are working on this largest telescope in Southern Africa at SAO, to be the ones who are working on the many telescopes we're about to build in Carnarvon at Losberg. And how do we ensure that we have this succession plan? The succession plan, essentially, because honorable members, we don't, when we say we want science and innovation to be transformed, it means we want at the helm of the leadership of these great interventions to be South African citizens who are representative of these spaces where these particular technologies are being built. And how do we do this? We ensure that there's a solid foundation through education, through basic education, going into higher education, and then of course getting support through the NRF for people to further their research and development, et cetera, and eventually leading these institutions. And now I want to go back to this one on education. So Honorable Marais, so we see a situation in Northern Cape where they there was an initial investment done by the DSI where they invested in the science lab at the local schools there, but there was no effort by the schools to make sure that whatever initial investment was done by the DSI is one, protected and taken care of, but also added to, right? So if someone brings something, you don't just say, oh, okay, well, this is all they've brought you. You do your best to enrich whatever initial investment has been made. Because ultimately, if we have the DSI, you know, building these labs or contributing equipment to these labs and they're not being taken care of, it's almost like pouring water into a bucket that has holes in it. So what then came to mind as we did our oversight, honorable members, is how do we get other committees that are responsible for some of these areas that we're now interacting with to be aware of these particular challenges and take on responsibility on their side to support us in ensuring that we have a successful science and innovation system that is inclusive and representational. Coming out of that oversight visit, for example, we will be having a meeting with the Department of Basic Education, well, with the Committee on Basic Education and its department next week. Of course, we're going to raise a myriad of issues around higher education and basic education, but a big part of it is also going to speak to science and innovation, as well as basic education, speaking to how we create this foundation where young people have access, young people across South Africa, either urban or rural South Africa, have access to science, physics, maths, etc., so that they do have the skills that can allow them to go take astronomy in varsity, to go and do whatever qualification may be necessary in a TVET college, so that they too can contribute to these really groundbreaking technologies that are being produced by South Africa, right? So either with the skills that they'll get from a TVET college, and they'll then go build the telescopes in Carnarvon, or through the astronomy they may learn at Fort Blackie, they will then be able to observe whatever findings that we see through these optical or radio telescopes, right? So that is the vision. And in order for us to succeed on that, we need to, at this level as committees, understand what we're trying to collectively achieve, because we can't work in silos, right? I mean, if I were to, for example, use transport, there's great opportunity in boosting the local economies of Sutherland in terms of astro-tourism. But we need to make sure that we have great roads, first of all, so that also needs work and better collaboration between the municipality, between the provincial government, etc. In terms of rail, to move, for example, agriculture that is taking place within that particular province, how do we then interact with transport on that matter? The equipment that is used for these really great telescopes we've seen, for example, SALT in Sutherland, to transport that equipment needs, like, you need to treat that equipment with the utmost delicacy. And one of those little glasses that they use for this massive telescope costs so much money. That means we need to really make sure that the roads and the road infrastructure is on par, because we can't afford to have even a little bit of a scratch on those glass pieces that are used, which needs better integration between all of us as various departments. There's this matter, Honorable Jacobs, on health, where they speak about how astronomy could ultimately assist us with the mental health challenges that we are faced with. So we've heard this as articulated by colleagues from the NRF. It is in platforms like this where we can then share that information with yourselves as colleagues from the Committee on Health, and with your insight, better insight on issues related to health, really assist us in advocating for that in the committees that you sit in. So this is, really on a surface level, honorable members, the type of interest that we as a committee have, that perhaps also the department has, in being able to have these interactions with yourselves as members from different committees. When we think of, for example, Indigenous knowledge systems, how do we protect our indigenous knowledge systems. With COVID-19, there was an excessive use of umhlonyane, something that grows in the back in the backyard of many of our grandmothers and grandfathers. People have gone and packaged it and whatever. Maybe others have even taken it to other parts of the world where they are growing it. Should we be protecting such knowledge systems that could perhaps be unique to the South African context? Would it still be called umhlonyane when it exists elsewhere in the world, or when it is grown elsewhere in the world? And that's the type of assistance that we would also need from colleagues from trade, for example. What we also, for example, honorable members, is really appreciate for colleagues to continue with some of the briefings that we would have received today. I mean, last week when we met with colleagues from health and we were presented with the mRNA technologies, vaccine technologies, honorable members from health said, okay, we would like to have this briefing again, and perhaps maybe even with the Department of Health, you know, within the context of health predominantly, for us to further these deliberations and assisting the departments in doing their work. Now, we would also appreciate a situation where the various committees are able to, for example, call on the Department of Science and Innovation, call on the department, the various departments represented here, work together, have sectorally focused briefings that could then speak to those specific portfolios, and therefore colleagues taking on the responsibility of seeing how science, technology and innovation initiatives are then spearheaded and forwarded and championed in their various committees. So we would also want members to take upon that particular responsibility. I really think Honorable Buthelezi and Honorable Khasa, as well as Honorable Siwela, covered a lot of ground in terms of budget coordination. And, you know, I'm not sure if it was, Honorable Buthelezi was saying, it's also very important in saying we want greater budget coordination. We're not only calling for increased budget, but saying with what we have currently, how do we make sure that we are, or how do we make sure we bring one another into confidence in the fact that there is budget being allocated towards developing and strengthening or promoting science, technology and innovation in our various departments. As you're saying, it might not be overt in how it is categorized, but it could be there, and we need to be able to make that particular analysis and audit and see that definitely there is contributions being made towards that. And maybe out of that, Honorable Khasa, we could see how we have a joint committee meeting with the interministerial task team and treasury, and maybe including presidency, the colleagues who are working the portfolios on monitoring and evaluation, to see, to be brought into confidence on how that is finding expression. And of course, you know, cautioning all of us around the personalization of budgets. The budgets don't belong to, you know, our budget. People like to say our budget, what is our budget? It's the budget of the country, it's the budget of the citizens of this country. And we all need to be able to understand that these budgets are there to service all of us. And maybe at a later stage, once the decadal plan is finalized, we may need to meet again to understand the commitment. Honorable Mahlatsi, you covered this quite extensively. The commitments that various departments would have had to make through the stakeholder engagements that the department is currently having towards the finalization of the decadal plan. And I can't stress, DG, the importance of you indicating where you may be currently having challenges in those particular deliberations that are taking place across departments, where we are not seeing as greater commitments as we would want to see. So just really emphasizing the question that's come through from Honorable Mahlatsi on that term. Spoken to astrotourism, astronomy for health purposes. And really, colleagues, there are such great interventions that are coming through that are responsive to some of the social collisions and ills and needs of our country, that if we aren't able to better synergize, they will keep on reaching bottlenecks and you know, end roads, right? So for example, where we had the CSIR develop sustainable housing solutions, you know, that particular initiative remained a pilot or remained in the pilot phase for a very long time because of obstacles related to a lack of integration. And now, for example, you have UJ, who are now 3D printing sustainable houses, where we could have made greater inroads as government through our entities such as the CSIR. Honorable Matumba speaks to the fact that as we meet right now, we're meeting on applications that are not South African. And DG Mdjwaga, we've always spoken to how do we then make sure that you know, the confidentiality, sovereignty of the information that we share on these platforms is then secured. This is why it becomes, Honorable Matumba, important for us, Matumba, for us to have the Department of Comms and Digital Technologies present in these meetings, for them, together with the Department of Science and Innovation, to bring us into confidence on how we are using local technologies to respond to this, local innovations to respond to this. Because we know that there are young people out there who are developing these platforms for us to use. Why aren't we using them? Should we as Parliament, should we as government not be the first ones to use these platforms in bringing in encouraging citizens to use these locally produced innovations and technologies? They are there. There are young people who have already created these particular platforms. But I think I'll leave it at that for now. I think much of my comments was really to emphasize why it is so important that at a committee level, we are also able to have such joint committee meetings. I mean, it's a resolution of the Chair of Chairs meetings to say that we need to really find ways of breaking the silos within the department. If we are able, we can't expect departments to break silos if we as committees are not breaking those silos at a level of accountability, at a level of oversight. And so I think, DG, I at this point would like to hand over to you. I don't have many questions, but really to attempt to emphasize the importance of us being able to relate at this level. Over to you, DG Mdjwaga.
Thanks very much, Chair, and thanks very much to all the members for their insightful inputs, and that makes me very, very excited, and I guess the rest of the DSI team. So I've got three chunks of responses with your permission, Chair. The first one, which I call the A category, is the one where one is very much aware that this is the first time such a presentation is made to other committee members, and that they may not be fully aware of some of the work that the National System of Innovation has done. But we would like to assure them and give them a sense of comfort that it is a lot. And we are of the opinion that that investment that has been made by this government is now ready to start solving the problems that we have in society and in the economy. We are happy to find ways and mechanisms through you, Chair, and other committees to continue that advocacy process and demonstrate how these solutions can address the problems that we have. So this advocacy awareness program is something that we'd be happy to continue and invest time with yourselves. So the suggestion, for instance, that says let's have a follow-up meeting of this nature, and perhaps in between follow-up meetings with some committees, it's something that we would welcome, including the specific request by a small business development rule through your office and their office set up that meeting, and we will be in a position to respond to what are those opportunities that the small businesses can derive from this vision document and the decadal plan going forward. So we'll leave that up to you, and then we'll take guidance from yourself and the other committees. The second set of response relates to a comment that you've already made, and which was raised by about two members, I think Honorable Tembekwayo and Honorable Chirwa, who were still seeking guidance as to why this meeting today. I perhaps want to re-emphasize a couple of things. One is that the world is changing and we need to prepare for that world that is changing. And usually these things take time. And I will illustrate this, Chair. The success and us raising our hands in the global race for green hydrogen and hydrogen as an alternative fuel is an initiative and is a program that we started in 1998, early 2000. So it's over 15 to 20 years of investment in this area, building the capabilities, learning how to produce hydrogen fuel cells, how we will set up the infrastructure that makes us to have that hydrogen society roadmap that is as bold in terms of the number of jobs that we intend to create and the solutions that we'll provide and the economic opportunities that we'll derive as a country. So these things take time. So we can decide to assume that these technologies that are changing the world will change it even more so, just taking into account a couple of comments that says the fourth industrial revolution is here. We think that we need to prepare, and the decadal plan is exactly that document, and that the national system of innovation has developed some solutions through specific demonstrator programs, and they, however, need to be taken up by other government departments. We don't have the resources nor the mandate to roll them out, and hence the interministerial committee that we have proposed and that is meeting. But as you say, Chair, yes, we can do that through the IMC, but if the portfolio committees could also help us in ensuring that those intergovernmental programs are being taken forward collectively would be appreciated. And hence this, what I call socialization meeting today, and hopefully we'll go forward. So we hope that the two members will appreciate the need for ongoing engagement across government departments on some of these areas. And I could give two specific examples. The one is the work that we are doing to start developing local vaccine manufacturing, not the fill and finish which we have through companies like Aspen, BioVac and others, but to actually have the ingredient where the money is actually being made. To do this work requires an interface between our department, science and innovation, the health department, trade and industry, and national treasury. We are already spending about 25 billion rands as a country buying vaccines from a number of stakeholders. If we said we will buy approximately 12.5 billion worth of vaccines that are locally produced, if of course they are just as efficacious as the one we import, we can give you a sense of how much money will not leave the country because of imports of beer, how much jobs will be created in South Africa, in not only the companies that will be producing vaccines, but those that will be supplying a range of associated ancillary products. It's huge. So this is one example that shows that working together across a number of departments starts to create a new value for South Africa that we've never had before. I can all give a number of other examples. It's the same thing with the hydrogen, green hydrogen. If the Department of Trade and Industry has been given the responsibility of developing a commercialization strategy, that strategy cannot be in isolation with what we have developed as the Department of Science and Innovation. So those two departments have to work together in developing how do you set up small, medium enterprises that would benefit from the rollout of the programs that we have just shared with you. So I hope these two illustrate, therefore, the need to have more than one committees at a time and across committees to continue to have the kind of conversation that we have today. And then we need to appreciate broadly that some of the current problems could be solved by these innovations. I think I've already said this. And then what I would like to do then, Chair, is to select a couple of responses or provide some responses to some of the issues that have been raised. The first issue that was raised by Honorable Makesi about solving the current problem of fertilizer, the answer is no. We are not able to do that because we've not been working on it. But I suppose the Department of Agriculture, knowing who they work with, they are already thinking about how to manufacture fertilizer. Our contribution could be when the project that I've talked about in Mpumalanga and Lephalale, where you take flue gas and start to produce hydrogen, is ready for the market uptake, then we will be involved. But these are initiatives where we are still researching, piloting, and trying to get this into the marketplace. So not now, but in the near future, yes. And then there was a proposal from Honorable Chira around developing a roadmap for monitoring the day cattle plan. We accept that. I think it also came from Honorable Mahlatsi. We will develop that. But just to remind you that this document is in its consultation phase as part of its finalization. We hope that it will culminate this year into that plenary of the president, the private sector, civil society, and government coming together and say, we accept this as a blueprint for what we want to do on science, technology, and innovation in the next 10 years. There are programs in the document that we will have then to do, and our portfolio committee know that it's on the elements of knowledge generation and continue to invest in the knowledge that we need for all of these innovations, to start developing solutions for government and for the local industry over the next 5 to 10 years. And we will have indicators of performance around how that will be measured. We want to have science that informs the decision that we make as government and society as a whole. And we have demonstrated this through the work that we did during COVID, where we demonstrated how you can use the investment in genomics that have been done last 10, 15 years to be able to monitor the pandemic. So we accept the development of the roadmap. Now, Honorable Tembegwayo asked maybe 3 questions. The first is, why are they here? I hope I've provided an explanation to that. And then she wanted to know what is meant by taking beyond what we have done health innovation and large STI programs. And what are those? Just to share with her that we, during COVID, were asked to develop ventilators when they were in short supply. And we did produce about 20,000 ventilators that were very helpful in a number of hospitals, locally produced, bought in the hospitals, save lives. Can we then continue to develop those ventilators for exports? And in fact, to continue to support ventilators that are needed in the rest of the continent. The point that was raised by the trade and industry chair, Honorable Ngamashe, under the Continental Free Trade Agreement. We have made a number of breakthroughs on the understanding of the pandemics, this network of genomic surveillance. We are now setting up in the process with the NRF to set up a center for pandemics, because in the next 10 years, pandemics are going to be with us. As I've indicated, we need surveillance tools. We need science to understand those pandemics. We need to understand what is now becoming a trend, what called One Health, where these pandemics are moving from animals to human beings. So we're setting that up. That's what we mean by taking what we have learned from COVID to the next level. So I hope those 2 examples help. in order to give a sense of what we mean by this. Honorable Mananiso, and I think Honorable Ishmael, wanted to know what is in the Innovation Compact. Broadly, is to agree on the priorities, is to agree on the innovations, Honorable Matlatsi, that are needed to drive these priorities, is to jointly agree on the funding, and it's to also agree that innovation is the whole of society issue. So that's broadly what is contained in the Innovation Compact, but we're happy to make this available to all the committees once, of course, the IMC has got a signature on this. And again, these are issues that we are working on for this year. Honorable Mananiso indicated or wanted to know the previous meetings and where departments have not attended. We haven't made a follow-up, but we continuously engage through the clusters, and we also continue, hopefully, in the next IMC to prepare for those IMCs. We'll engage with those departments, and hopefully they will get a sense of where we are. Honorable Jacobs was just talking about the world is changing, appreciating the presentation. And then I just wanted to come back to the proposal made by Honorable Groenewald, that it is perhaps ambitious to think that local government could make money available. We would like to have an open discussion, Honorable Mkacha and Honorable Groenewald, on this. Because sometimes the problems that local government has will be solved by innovations. And then when those innovations solve problems, you can then address the money issue. We can give specific examples again around how, yes, they may not have enough money, but even if they say 2% of our money to solve the problems that we have, building confidence to society as being an innovation to support a capable state is possible. So let's accept that there's no money, but let's also say if we took 1 or 2% of our budget, and we think that this could be done through an engagement or on allocations at local government level that comes from on the infrastructure grant, for instance, to say how can we roll out infrastructure differently through the innovations that we have made as the Department of Science and Innovation in our institutions. For an example, we now have alternative technologies to be provided at local level for sanitation. So do you continue to stay with the sanitation problems because you don't have money? Or do you say, I don't have money, but if I procure these alternative sanitation, which probably uses less water, I will have sufficient money by not putting money into the water infrastructure to buy these so that our citizens are happy and then the process of continuous improvement happens. So we're happy, Honorable Mkacha, again, to engage on those issues on, yes, there may be no money, but let's think differently around how we can use the resources and the innovations that we have to turn that around. I'd also like to acknowledge the issues raised on AGRIMA and what it can do in the building space. We already have an agreement with the Department of Human Settlements on how we can introduce innovative building technologies. And so we'll continue to work with them around how that can be done. We will share with Honorable Ishmael, if required, the innovations in the Western Cape. And then we appreciate, I will come back to that, the issue of innovation and skills in the medical side of things. So we'll be more than happy to respond. Come to the issue of schools. And I think, Honorable Mkacha, you've responded to this. The reason why we have a societal grand challenge that looks at what we need to do about approach to schooling in the future and now is because we have an agreement with the Department of Basic Education. We will then be identifying all the challenges that they have and what we can support them with as the Department of Science and Innovation. So again, I will not go through each and every of the issues she's raised, but to assure her that there is as part of the decadal plan, an intention to work closely with them to go through the list of those challenges and try and see which ones can be responded by innovation, understanding that there are issues which the department must solve itself because we cannot take the mandate of this. Issues of rural schools and what we can do in rural schools, there are things we can do. For an example, the Council for Scientific and Industrial Research has been developing something called TV white spaces. So essentially what that means is that if you look at the spectrum for TV, which does reach rural areas, there are white spaces. They are part of the spectrum that is not being used for television. Earmark that for providing broadband and education in schools in rural areas. Innovation to solve connectivity in school can be done. Yeah. So that addresses that. I really like some of the comments that were made by Honorable Matumba, that yes, we need to think about the future, but there are problems of today that we also need to think about. We totally agree with him. So I've already responded to the issue of no network and how innovation can address the problems of today. I've already given an example of how we've been developing with the Water Research Commission and the CSIR alternative sanitation that can be deployed in schools. And hence this meeting to say, if these solutions have been developed, a specific government department take them up and be included in schools. I also take the point that we need to find a way of having a mechanism of ensuring that whilst 4IR, whilst we talk about 4IR being something far, but we need to look at things that are impacting society now. We would be more than happy to engage with Honorable Matumba on the investments that we have made in the area of Internet of Things and developing this in the learning factory and how it can benefit small, medium enterprises today. We can indicate how blockchain technologies can be used to assist transactions of small, medium enterprises in rural areas. We are working on a proposal with the CSIR today. So we take what he's saying, but we say we are in agreement, but going point, Chair, to the point I made earlier on, appreciating that we haven't had sufficient time to share with each of the members that were here today what we have done in this space, these are some of the things that we can do. I'd like to respond to Honorable Boshoff's question about Anglo and why they have decided to invest in some of the alternative technologies. Well, there are two reasons, Honorable Boshoff. The first is, as South Africa, we have made commitments in Paris to reduce the greenhouse gas emissions. So government has been consulting with the private sector on which initiatives that we can embark on collectively in order to address that. So they have an obligation as part of the nationally determined contributions to reduce greenhouse gas emissions to look at means and ways in which they can reduce their greenhouse gas emissions. So the the truck, material handling truck in the mine in Mogalakwena, which was replaced with hydrogen fuel cell from diesel. It's their contribution to do that. But they see opportunities even outside that as well, because they would like to see more platinum being used. So if they're mining platinum, they would like to see usage of platinum. And as you know, we went with you to the University of the Western Cape. The hydrogen fuel cell is based on adding value in platinum, and hence they will make more money if more platinum is being used. They would need to extract more of platinum. Of course, we are working with other companies in South Africa. Sasol, for instance, has a huge interest in green hydrogen. They have a huge interest as well in some of the work in hydrogen fuel cells. And then Honorable Buthelezi has asked if we do work with the Department of Defense. The answer is yes. For an example, in the work that we've been doing in building the satellite capability, we are in agreement with them. But there are other areas of work in IT and cybersecurity that we are exploring with them. We agree with you the importance of carbon capture. And then the point that the budgets of science, technology and innovation are probably available in the departments. We conduct a study every year, which is called Science Technology Activities, and look at what is being invested in various government departments. So we agree with you. We are aware of what's happening across government. But what is obvious in those studies is that there's a continuous decline over the last 5 to 10 years. So, and then on the cannabis, yes, we are doing work in the cannabis, and we'll be more than happy again to share what we are doing. We are supporting the master plan that is led by the Department of Health or Agriculture, I can't remember, in this area. So the answer is definitely yes. And then the points that have been shared by Honorable Tasa around DPME, COCTA, DDM level and DDM philosophy and learning on this, we'll be more than happy as we embark on the budget coordination process and how it's done to share with COCTA so that the funding that is required to be concentrated for driving the DDM model can be shared with you. So definitely yes. And then we are the committee in parliament around how can we take this forward in a meaningful way at a management level. And then the issue of how do we assist moving some elements of government from 2IR to 4IR, the answer is yes. We worked with the Department of Health fairly closely at national level. What is probably not known is that the data and the information management system about you being vaccinated, getting the certificate, when you go for your second jab, all of that data management of vaccination and the numbers of people that are vaccinated and the data analytics that was used at the CSR is the work that we have supported the Department of Health on. We, some time ago, were asked to develop the Clinic of the Future. The CSIR has done this work. How you have a clinic that allows people to introduce the fourth industrial revolution type applications. We already have been doing this. Again, the need and the emphasis around the uptake then is an issue that we are wanting to take forward. Honorable Ngamasha, we totally agree with you on all the points that have been made on the Africa Free Continental Agreement and the exports. We totally agree with you. We are already having three programs where we are value adding. In the interest of time, Chair, I would say if Honorable Ngamasha would like us to have a dedicated presentation on how we see our work interfacing with trade, industry and competition, both the focus on the continent and building capacity, both on value addition, there's a platinum group metals, precursor material for batteries, and there's also a work that we're doing on titanium, for an example. So we'd be more than happy to have a dedicated session on that. And then Honorable Kruger talked about a presentation to small business. Would be more than happy to do that. There's a point generically that was raised to say, how do we then make sure that the local innovations benefit from the work that we do? We have set up something and is proposed in the Decadal Plan, something called Technology Acquisition Deployment Fund. And this is the fund where we ask young people or anybody who has an innovation that would like to be deployed to demonstrate to one of our agencies, Technology Innovation Agency. And we hope that through the IMC, those innovations, if they can be taken by government, will then have a matchmaking event. In fact, a couple of weeks ago, we launched an innovation portal where some of those innovations can be, if you like, deposited. And those who seek to take those innovations to solve their problems can then go into the portal and begin to use those innovations for solutions that they would like to take forward. And Honorable Matlatsi, we are working with our colleagues from the Department of Higher Education and Training. We've said if the Tekedle plan has got to be taken forward, we need skills set that can be used to do that. So we will be sharing with yourself as our portfolio committee what we have done. The framework has been developed. We are now just populating that. We hope that there would be a conversation between the TVET branch, the branch responsible for the National Skills Fund, and the CTAS, and we have already set up a task team to look at that. So the answer is the workforce of the future and how we'll be affected by these innovations, we need to be aware of that. But just to give you a specific example, we have a program of developing the next generation of mining technologies. It's a program between the Mineral Council, CSIR, and ourselves, where with the mining companies, we would like to embark on a program of how to modernize mining. Last year, or early this year, there was an agreement which was signed between Mineral Council, all the unions in the mining sector, and the CSIR about the skill set that would be needed in this modernization of the mine. So we've got a practical example of how it's been done. Two, we've developed a framework of how to do this, and I've already given you an example of the thinking around the Hydrogen Society and the TVET skills that would be needed to drive that. So the answer is yes. The role of the private sector, definitely, we see it at three levels. One, at the level of finalizing these research development and innovation plans that are aligned to their sectors, and the fact that we will be aligning with the master plans of the DTIC and others. Two, we're hoping that they will co-invest in research development and innovation. And we have pilots that have demonstrated that sometimes when the government puts R1, the private sector can put R2 as part of solutions that they need. So we are excited about that. And then, of course, the private sector informing the research that needs to be done. And then I've already talked about a roadmap for further engagements, and we totally agree with you on climate change and how we need to take this forward. We would be happy again, either at a portfolio committee specific on science and innovation or joint a portfolio committee to share with you exciting work that the system has been doing on climate change, both on the science of the climate change, but also on how we can begin a program or a set of programs to mitigate against some of the likely impacts of climate change. So Chair, I'll stop here. As I say, I have tried to touch each and every question that was asked, but others are more cross-cutting and generic in order to take this work forward. Thank you very much. I don't know if there's any of my team members, if you still have time, that might want to add anything that I might have left with some detail perhaps. So I had seen Mr. Patel. I don't know, Imran, if you want to add anything.
Thank you. Just 1 minute, one on two devices. No, I think you've covered it well, and just a point to reinforce, the one point to reinforce is the one that you made about, long-term investments. So we have a number of programs now, which we haven't even highlighted, where it's about using everything from nuclear technologies to the basic sciences to address challenges, whatever those are, health, education, and it's quite important to continue investing in those, and that's part of the challenge that we have as the DSI, is that there's so much opportunities to take forward innovations that have potential. But if we direct resources to that, as opposed to building the foundational work as you've captured in the strategic management model, it reduces our abilities and it weakens us in the long term. So we hope that through this initiative that started today, that it will further strengthen our partnership with a whole range of other government departments, local, provincial, national, and in that way, make sure that we're building the innovation system from basic sciences right to applications and commercialization. But the others, DJ, I think we've captured a whole range of issues that I had made notes about as well. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Imran. Rebecca, anything that you want to add quickly so we give back to the chair?
No, sure, DG. I just wanted to, you know, one thing I learned when I was at an event in Cape Town that was being hosted by the Department of Small Business Development was that, you know, out of the 11 million jobs that were expected by 2030, 9 million are actually coming from expected to come from SMEs. So I think in terms of partnerships, I think it's great that we're having these meetings, because I think it's critical that if those jobs are going to be created, especially through new sectors, we have to do it, you know, in partnership, because SME has the spread, they have the focal areas, but we actually have the opportunities coming through the pipeline. And I think those partnerships are critical so that SMEs can, you know, part and parcel play a role in creating jobs. And then also in terms of interacting with other departments, often we're part of the value chain. And I think close interlinkages are critical, because in most cases we pilot, we show something can work, and the other departments take it to the next level. So I'd like just like to make those two points. Thank you.
Okay, no, thanks very, very much. So Honorable Nkacha, may we hand over back to you? We hope we've done justice to responding to some of the issues that were raised. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, DG, and to colleagues from DSI. I think Rebecca really also touched on a very important point, to say that we can innovate through research and development a response to many issues in the country or challenges in the country, and it then becomes the importance or the responsibility for other departments to then continue to spearheading these innovations. And that's why it's so important for us to continue having these joint meetings or sessions where we can bonisang. I think I prefer how it is said in Vanek. Honorable members, thank you really for availing yourselves this morning. We really appreciate the time that you've put aside. Perhaps let me check if there aren't any chairpersons before I conclude. If there aren't any chairpersons that would like to say anything before I close the meeting. Chairpersons of committees.
We are fine. I'm fine from my side. Thank you very much for the session.
Thank you, Honorable Buthelezi.
Same from me, Chair. Thank you very much. Just we're very thankful and we're looking forward to further engagements. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you.
I'm fine too. Thank you very much for your invite.
Thank you, Honorable Makaka.
I'm also fine. There is a lot that we can learn and there is a lot that we need to apply in our portfolio committees. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ntobongwana. Okay, I'd like to believe, Honorable Members, that chairs of the various committees are fine and we are then able to close the meeting. Thank you very much, Honorable Members. Again, we as a committee have learned from yourselves, like we did last week, like we will next week as we meet with the committee from Basic Education. I'm also very excited about that that joint committee meeting. I also then would like to just remind all of us that what we have said should happen going forth is that firstly, committed to the spirit of Honorable Litsiye DG, when you do sit the STI plenary, please do make sure that you extend an invite to ourselves as the Committee of Higher Education, Science and Innovation, but to all committees who are present here today, and in fact, all the many others that we would have left out of this meeting, not intentionally, of course. I think as the meeting unfolded, we began to realize that, as Honorable Buthelezi said, science cuts across all of government and all departments and the various spheres of government as well. So can we please have an invite to the plenary? And then we as a committee need to commit ourselves to meeting with some of the other committees that we have not met with yet. I mean, already next week, and DG Ndrasa, I think it will be important that we extend the invite, Shanaz and Anele, to DSI as well. I mean, I think the bulk of it speaks to us interacting with basic education. But I think even if DG can send a representative from the department to join that meeting, it will be great. So even if it's not yourself, but one of the other DDGs, that would be great. So we're already meeting with basic education. I mean, on HISA, we have said that at a later stage, we need to meet with mineral resources and energy. And we haven't done that yet. But I think beyond wanting to have a conversation out of what our observations were coming from HISA, on the hydrogen economy, I think it would be important for us to even maybe expand that, the scope of conversation on a number of cross-cutting issues in mineral resources and energy. But there are, you know, other departments, Honorable Mahlatsi, your previous committee on agriculture, I think just from our oversight visit in the Northern Cape, and reinforced by DG's presentation this morning, it would be important for us to also meet with that committee as well. Really coming out, which is not something I think our government has had a knee-jerk reaction on. We've always known that climate change is a growing crisis, but I think what has happened since the start of this year is just a really harsh reminder of the fact that we need to respond to issues around climate change and finding mitigative strategies around that. And so we might, you know, coming out of this meeting particularly, it seems as though there is a need for us to maybe have a joint committee meeting with environment and maybe COCTA around issues of climate change. But there are other committees like human settlements that you know, it's evident from the engagements we've had today, it will be very important for us to meet with them. Another resolution, DG, you've already committed yourself to Honorable Namashe's committee, but it will be important that the Department of Science and Innovation, together with other departments, have sectoral briefings for these different portfolios on these matters that we've scratched the surface on. And then, of course, around the decadal plan, I think once it's finalized, it would be important for us to you know, have a meeting of this nature around that. So in terms of the nitty-gritties of the planning around these broader, bigger meetings, we will have to sit as maybe chairs and our various committee secretaries and the departments and see how we can create a meeting that can be conducive and productive. You know, what we don't want to do is meet for the sake of meeting, but what then comes out of our meetings? And, you know, this has been a really important question that members have been asking. We meet and then what, right? So we need to think, you know, on how we can be effective in the meetings that we will have at a later stage. Thank you so much, honorable members, to all the various committee secretaries that have had to work and coordinate with our committee secretaries. Thank you so much. And we look forward to, you know, hearing from yourselves on how we are winning on the matter that we have lobbied. I hope we have successfully lobbied various committees on this matter, DG. It was a very overt lobby, wasn't in a corner somewhere, you know, because this is important work that will really assist in taking our countries forward. Thank you so much, honorable members. This meeting has come to an end for yourselves. So now that we are adopting, are we still adopting reports now? Can I just double check?
No, Chair, not today.
Okay, all right. So the meeting has officially come to an end. Thank you so much, honorable members and colleagues.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Take care. Hi, Rebecca. Thank you. Take care.
That was my pleasure.
Leave the chair, long leave.